Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you say, we have Senate File 476, the DNR OHV damage account bill, and with me today is Bill Johnson to go over the bill and answer any questions the committee may have. As you look at the bill, and we go down to line 1.10, it talks about damage by illegal operation after August 1st, 2003. We don't have an unlimited necessarily amount of dollars. I was wondering if it would make some sense to put that August 1st, 2007. If that makes any sense to you at all, Mr. Chair, I would...
Could you maybe, if you want to, but maybe explain what your bill does.
Okay, let's do that first, Mr. Chair. So with me is Bill Johnson, who's going to go over the bill and answer any questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Please introduce yourself.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Bill Johnson. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the Division of Trails and Waterways, and my responsibilities include providing support to our ongoing statewide forest reclassification review and oversight for the OHV damage account. Oh, but today, the bill you have in front of you offers some minor changes to the language that was put in place by the 2003 legislative session. You know, in particular, the department is proposing to change the current language, which has off-highway vehicle-related damage being repaired from unpermitted locations, all to locations subject to illegal operation. And then we are also proposing to extend the existing sunset date, which is tied to each biennium, to the total expenditure of funds that were allocated back in 2003. The original legislation provided for $500,000 to be available for the repair and or restoration of damage to property from the, again, unpermitted, or from the operation of off-highway vehicles in unpermitted locations. At this time, there are still funds available in the account, and the department believes that extending the date until the expenditure of funds is a more efficient means of providing for the management of the account. These are basically two relatively small changes to the account, but we believe that they will allow us to better conduct the activity.
So the problem is that the damage account fixes damage for allows the money to be used to fix damage in unpermitted areas, but it doesn't allow it to fix damage in permitted areas.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. When the legislation was originally established, preconditions were set but before funds could be expended from the account. The damage needed to occur after August 1st, 2003. The damage had to be due to the operation of off-highway vehicles. And just as a reminder, off-highway vehicles are all-terrain vehicles, off-highway motorcycles, and then licensed, registered off-road vehicles, trucks. For the property owner, the person whose property was damaged by OHV operation, had to have made reasonable efforts to prevent future reoccurrence of the damage. And then also, and the final precondition was that efforts had to be made to seek restitution before the account could be used to repair the damage. So the department, for 4 years or so, has been receiving, reviewing claims this type of damage to see that the preconditions are met. And if these preconditions are satisfied, then we provide for the reimbursement back to the to the property owner for the repair or restoration of the activity. The original language, unpermitted locations, is, for lack of a better term, not as precise as we would prefer. But ultimately, we end up relying on, shall we say, either civil or civil citations or criminal citations as our means of defining whether the activity was unpermitted or not. And so going to illegal or even unlawful, you know, operation better aligns the statute and all with the criteria and how they've been applied by the department.
How much money is left in the account?
The fiscal notes show approximately $350,000. I can get that for you. It's in my stack here. At this time, currently, there are $341,655 left in the account. The original appropriation was $500,000.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, you have worked on both public and private land?
That's correct.
How would you estimate the dollars are divided up? Do you get requests equally from both, or...?
Senator, it principally from public land managers. We have gotten claims on both private and public property.
So it's mainly public areas.
Mainly public areas.
usually, money gets spent pretty quickly around. What is there something that's impeding the distribution of that damage account that you've only spent $200,000 up to $500,000 in the last 4 years?
Senator, that's a good question. I would offer that the conditions that were established in the original legislation are tight. You know, if these preconditions are not met, then it would not be appropriate for funds to be applied. The damage had to occur after August of 2003. It needs to be in an unpermitted location. The efforts have to have been made to prevent reoccurrence, and then efforts to seek restitution have to have been put in place. As each of these conditions are applied, that narrows down the range of potential applications. But it could also be offered that, at least in terms of unpermitted locations, not very many claims are actually occurring, at least where the operation is not allowed.
What's an example that of damage that you'll be able to fix now? That under the word illegal as opposed to the word unpermitted?
I would offer there's not much change. The way we have interpreted unpermitted location is essentially very similar or the same and all, but as illegal. Again, we're trying to at least narrow and all or at least try to clarify, to have the statute match with what we're having to rely on as claims come forward. One of the shorthand approaches we take, would one of our conservation officers or a county sheriff's office, would they issue a citation the preceding action? So, again, that our goal here is just to try and clarify.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, would you
talk just a little bit more about the illegal versus unpermitted? For example, how about the situation of trespass? If somebody drives an ATV across private property, they have not been warned not to, but it's not signed, and the private owner does not want them there. That might not technically be illegal. I don't know exactly when the law would be or not, but it would not be a permitted area. Is there, what's the fine distinction between the two?
Senator Fredrickson, Mr. Chair. Ultimately, our goal here is to provide for the repair of OHV related damage. But under the situation as you outlined, if the individual, whoever it was, whether known or not, but your example is they wouldn't be known. If they had indeed conducted trespass, we would consider that to be the situation. Our goal is to repair
Mr. Chairman,
the damage.
Would you consider that to be illegal the landowner get reimbursement?
I believe the short answer is yes, Senator. But I'm not a law enforcement but professional. So that's the best answer that I can provide for you. Again, our goal is to try and provide for the repair restoration of OHV-related damage.
Senator Saxhog, should we consider maybe saying illegal or unpermitted so that it allows for both?
Mr. Chair, it's an interesting idea. I'd probably defer again to Mr. Johnson to give his opinion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, that broadens the applicability, if that is the intention, would allow for both types of situations and all to be dealt with. Our particular request here is to try and align the statute with the reality that we're seeing in the field. I don't think that would cause harm in our ability to be able to implement the program.
I still don't get the. You say that it broadens. That means that you're able to do something now under your new language that you were not able to do before. Could you give me an example of what you'd be able to do now that you would not be able to do before? This proposed change.
Thank you. If I use the term broaden, then I apologize. But I don't think it would, in actuality, alter the types of situations we can deal with.
Okay.
We found when we were implementing the program, putting it in place back in 2003, we found that operating with the term unpermitted locations and how to deal with the evidence that would be coming to us under a claim. That it was really, ultimately, we found ourselves dealing with, these areas of whether a citation, would be issued for trespass or such.
So you haven't necessarily been able to get reimbursement or apply the damage account to certain trespass situations because the enforcement officials on the ground are seeing a difference between unpermitted and illegal.
Thank you, Senator. Trespass would be an example, of an unpermitted location. Operation of an OHV in a wildlife management area, for example, hypothetically, would be, a situation where the operation was in an unpermitted area. So these are the types of things that we are focusing on. If the criteria are met, providing for the reimbursement.
It sounds like it maybe would be helpful if it said unpermitted or illegal, so it covers both situations. But we don't have a quorum yet to move that amendment.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, You told us that in the last 3 years, this program has paid out about $200,000. About how many claims is that, or how many landowners? And how many have been rejected or turned down, if you have those numbers?
Senator Fredrickson. Yes, sir, and Mr. Chair. We have processed 22 claims, over the three-year period, for an expenditure of approximately $140,000. Over that time, at least in terms of formal applications that were submitted, two were denied. But we do receive the way the program is administered is at each of our area trails and waterways offices. That's the lead on dealing with private landowners and processing the claims. Certainly, we have calls that would come into those offices, or even my office, where individuals would inquire about the OHV damage account and its applicability. When the individual learns that it was not an unpermitted location, for example, riding in a ditch right-of-way, an individual might have concern about that. That is actually legal operation under certain conditions. So someone might be coming forward for the OHV damage account seeking a repair, and they will not, but the criteria, the preconditions, but exclude reimbursement for the action that they want.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Johnson, just writing in the road right away of the ditch would be legal operation unless the road authority had closed the I'd like to talk a little bit about reconciling the numbers you've given us. You said that you've got $342,000 approximately remaining, and you spent $140,000. That's $480,000. The other $20,000 administration?
Then I gave you a math error. I apologize. It would be $160,000 that had been spent. Excellent, Senator. Thank you.
Any other questions? So we'll lay this over until we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Mr. Chair, can I ask one for the Senator Sackslaw?
Yeah.
You and Senator Sackslaw had some discussion about making it illegal or unpermitted.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear a response to Senator Sackslaw of which way he would prefer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, if it's consensus of the committee that that would be a better way of doing it, I would be in favor of it.
I think it might be a good idea.
Yeah.
So let's move that when we have a quorum.
And when we get a quorum, the other thing, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to discuss is, again, is I think we'd be better off on that one date on the front page.
Could you explain what you wanted to do again on that?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.10, since this is going to affect on August 1st, 2007, I thought it might be appropriate to have it to start then.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Johnson, then if we change that date, have you identified damage up to that point so that we know if it's occurring? Am I reading that right? If it occurs...
You wouldn't be able to use the money if the damage occurred between that doesn't make a difference.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would think the current law would take us up to August
up to
2007.
The new date, right?
Right.
Okay.
But
Mr. Knopf?
Chairman, if there was an application for damage that occurred between 2003 and 2007, you wouldn't be eligible for payment.
Okay, so I wasn't thinking.
No, you're
I was,
right.
Okay.
That seems to be counsel's interpretation.
Okay.
Is that what you intend?
No. Okay. And thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Knott.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator Sackler. All right. Senate file 1410. From the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1410 is an idea that came to me from a couple of people who live in my district who have a resort or, you know, that kind of thing. They kind of feel that the state of Minnesota is leaving money on the table by, you know, not having non-resident fishing licenses that are the same as the states from which the people come from. You know, I think, you know, we've listened to this issue before, and I think there's good things to be said on both sides of the argument, but, you know, Minnesota probably gets more people from other states that come here because our rates may not be as high, too, so I think there are issues on both sides of it, but I think they may be right in saying that there is considerable dollars that we leave on the table by not having a rate that is similar. I know the DNR has said this poses some problems for them in you know, how they go about doing that because there are so many different rates in the states that surround us. So, you know, it's just an idea for the committee to consider, Mr. Chair and members, and, you know, whatever way you go is, I'm sure it'll be the best decision.
Thank you for your comments. We did this, we passed a bill out of this committee earlier this session relating to non-resident bow hunting.
Okay.
We did the, we did the opposite.
Okay.
Because what was turning out by doing this, people, non-residents, were ending up paying more to come into our state.
Mr. Chair,
did your resort intend for them to pay less when they come in?
No, Mr. Chair. One of them is a resort owner, and the other one just works at a different resort. But they both felt that Minnesota could collect substantially more revenue if we had non-resident licenses that were the same rate or the same price as the non-resident license in the state from which the person comes. But it ends up being a variable rate then, you know. People who come to Minnesota to fish from different states would pay a different rate depending on what the non-resident rate was in their state or province.
Plus, there's a law of diminishing returns. If they have to pay more, then it's entirely possible that less people will come and buy those licenses.
Yeah, we wouldn't know that, Mr. Chair, unless we tried it, I suppose. Yeah. But you know,
we had a few numbers to toss around for that bow hunting proposal. Does the DNR have any ideas on what this would mean? Could it mean an increase in our?
Mr. Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I'm just going to cite a few of the price differences. With fishing licenses, they're all across the board. You have a season license, a 1-day, a 10-day. Conservation license in some states, a family license, a 3-day license. Just looking at the seasoned resident versus non-resident, a Minnesota resident pays $17 right now for a season license. A non-resident pays $34 for a individual season license. And I apologize, I don't have copies of this table, but I'll get you copies before this afternoon's hearing if you desire. Iowa doesn't offer a resident non-season license. Or non-resident season license, they have a 1-day license or a 3-day license. So the 1-day license is $9 compared to our $8.50. But Illinois is $24.50 for a season license, so it would be a savings if you're coming from Illinois to Minnesota. Manitoba is $55, so you'd pay more. Michigan's $42, Missouri is $35, North Dakota is $35, Nebraska is $46, South Dakota is $62, and Wisconsin is $50. So it's all over the board. The problem we're going to have is setting up our ELS licensing system to accommodate this. It will take substantial reprogramming and monitoring and updating. When we did the bow license, for example, the only place you were able to get those non-resident archery licenses was through our ELS licensing center in St. Paul because of that reciprocity issue and the programming piece that it was basically a manual transaction. So we had a list. You would either email us, call us on the phone, or fax us a license application with a credit card, and we would send it in. As the chair has spoken, we do have, and there was a bill introduced and heard in this committee, going the opposite way, dealing with non-residents charging one fee on the bow hunting license, bringing that back to 135, and that's in our game of fish bill as well. Dealing with recruitment and retention efforts and other things like that, we feel it's most important to reduce the barriers for people to come to our state rather than create new ones.
You said Iowa doesn't have a non-resident season license?
No, Mr. Chair, members.
Any other states
if you're from Iowa, you would have to purchase, and I'm not sure how that would work because we don't offer one. If you would not be able to buy one, you'd either have to buy a one-day or a three-day license. The three-day is $16, the one-day is $9, but they don't offer a family license or a 10-day license, so that's something we would have to explore with the author as well if this is moving forward. What happens if a state doesn't offer that type of license? Are you unable to purchase that then, or what the impacts of that would be?
Are there any other states that are like Iowa?
Mr. Chair, Iowa is the only one of the regional ones that I have here that does not offer a seasonal license that I'm aware of.
Well, the way the bill is drafted then, someone from Iowa would not have to buy a license in Minnesota, so that would be a...
I grew up in Iowa. I think you could fish all the lakes in Iowa in 3 days.
Clean them out too, right?
Sorry, Beckerman.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you can compare archery license to fishing license. There's no comparison. A lot of people are going to come in here fishing from everywhere versus a few to come up from my way to you. And Mr. Chair, I'm trying to put my financial package together, and there's not a lot of money, and I don't think we can afford to lose any. You will never get me to believe that I want to go fishing. Another $10 on a fishing license wouldn't stop me, because the minnows cost me $15. So that's the difference. I think we're trading this. Dangerous.
So this is mainly a finance issue. We just, as a committee, need to consider whether we agree with the policy of this too. To have non-residents pay the same as they would as Minnesotans would in their state.
Mr. Chair, members, just as a reminder, the governor's budget does contain a $2 increase on the non-resident fishing licenses for invasive species, aquatic invasive species. And I know Senator Bach is working on a proposal that would increase the non-resident licenses and remove the requirement for portable ice fishing shelters for residents, that they would have to be licensed as well, which could impact the non-resident licenses by $1.50 or $2 in addition.
Okay, we still don't have a quorum, so we'll lay this over until we do.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
And if it passes, this will go to the Environment Finance Committee. Senator Bonnock here.
She's close. She was there.
Bo Carlson here.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Bo Carlson, B-O-E, with Three Rivers Park District. And actually, I would like to introduce Court Holton, our lobbyist consultant, to introduce the background on this bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Court Holton, and I represent Three Rivers Park District, which is a statutorily created regional park district in Minnesota. I was just with Senator Bonhoeff. I know she'll be here briefly. And what she was going to say to intro was that this is an attempt at a different type of approach.
I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Just starting to give your speech.
Come on, dear.
Thank you for your patience, and I do apologize, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am here today to talk to you about a bill with regard to cleaning up our waters, and we have a different approach in this bill. We will be coordinated in one large area and will use significant matching resources on the same authority as the owner of the property. In this case, it's the Three Rivers Parks District. So rather than me take you through the bill, I will let the people that I have brought take you through the bill. So I'll start with John. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Barton. I'm the Water Resources Manager for Three Rivers Park District. The Three Rivers Park District owns significant properties, and unfortunately, our properties abut nine lakes that are currently listed as impaired by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. And we have data that suggests that an additional eight water bodies will be listed as impaired within the next couple of years. Inclusion on the impaired waters list requires completion of a total maximum daily load study and improvements necessary to improve the water quality. When a lake is impaired, what it basically means is that the water quality is extremely poor. We have algal blooms that occur throughout most of the summertime, making the lake, in addition to looking like split pea soup, it shades out many of the native plants, allowing critter leaf pondweed and Eurasian water milfoil, which are exotic species, to grow more profusely. It also causes shifts in the fish populations where we change from game fish to rough fish. And unfortunately, as this process continues, it seems to get worse, and it gets more and more difficult, more expensive, and more time-consuming to improve the water quality. What this bill would allow the Park District to do is to accelerate the completion of the TMDL studies, as well as to accelerate the improvements in the water quality that are necessary. The map to my right shows some of the lakes on which we have impaired waters. So we are looking for the ability to address many of these problems. Most of our resources are within parks or adjacent to parks, as we indicated earlier.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chaudhry. Yeah. We have a quorum, though.
Yes, we do. We have a quorum.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Okay, continue.
Thank you. And most of these are what we would call regional resources. We have approximately 5 million visitors per year in the park district, many of whom come into the park system specifically to use the water resources. And with that, I'll let Mr. Carlson discuss it further.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. And again, for the record, Bo Carlson with Three Rivers Park District. Three Rivers Park District owns and operates roughly 27,000 acres of regional parkland. Majority of those park and park reserves are located on or around significant water bodies such as Lake Independence, Medicine Lake, and Lake Minnetonka. These properties represent a significant investment in both the acquisition and ultimately their development. That investment is currently being threatened. It's threatened by the rapid deterioration of our water quality. At Silver Lake in the city of St. Anthony, the lake has been deemed unswimmable by park district standards. At Lake Rebecca, one of the metro area's premier musky lakes, the DNR has indicated fish growth is stunted due to pollution. At many of our beaches, we have incorporated beach curtains and other management methods in order to provide swimmable water. And we are seeing a reduction in the amount of folks that are looking for open water swimming opportunities because of poor water quality. And the list goes on and on. The Park District has the ability and the expertise to handle these problems, and in many cases can assist smaller watershed management organizations that do not have the staff, the resources, or the ability to handle such solutions as this. We feel this is a significant step to improving not only our water quality, but can be an example for the state and the state of Minnesota of how both to implement TMDLs and complete the implementation of their recommendations to improve the water quality in the state. And with that, I'll turn it over to Court Holton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're aware of the short time available for presenting bills to the committee today, and so we've tried to present a very speeded up package here. I'm going to talk about the functions of the bill and the background of the idea and the politics behind this and where we're going. The structure of the bill is very simple. It basically, there's three parts to it. The first part bestows various powers upon the Three Rivers Park District relative to going after the water impairment problem.
Mr. Holton,
yes.
If I could have you pause there just a second. You on line 13, do you really need that? Doesn't the district have that power already?
Mr. Chairman, with regards to that, I think you're making reference to the joint powers. There is some overlap between our authorizing sections and the powers that council drafted into this bill from various water sections of the state statutes. In fact, I have a comparison sheet that would allow you to see which ones are slightly overlapping. But the answer to your question is we have joint powers authority already in our other statutes, so that wouldn't be technically necessary in this bill.
Senator Beckerman?
Mr. Chair, I'm kind of looking at this. I'm looking on page, on the first page. Whenever I see eminent domain, I remember the terrible battle we had even working on it. I see they can acquire it by eminent domain, doubtful, a lot of regulations that the rest of us, unless I'm not reading this right. Second part of this, if this bill moves, it's going to come to agriculture because there's four examples of feedlots.
Senator Vickman, good point. Now, I interrupted Mr. Holton in his testimony because he mentioned the joint powers, and I was wondering if that was necessary to be in the bill. So proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, the other part of the bill is the appropriation, which is a matched. It requires a match, so it would be an equal amount matched from the district, and it sets forth the purposes of the appropriation. It requires certification from the Department of Revenue that the money is being appropriately spent, and it requires separate accounting for it, and that is all of the administration that's contained in the bill. The structure of this is to try to use a different approach on water, on impaired waters, because we're losing ground as we operate presently. On this map over here, you see those lakes, they are rapidly deteriorating, and each one of those is a centerpiece of a park or a preserve or a nature area that a great deal of money has been spent in creating. And when those lakes go down, that whole resource, that whole park goes down with it. So what we're trying to do here is take the owners of all of this property, which is the Three Rivers Park District, and give them water powers in their own district, have them use half of their own money, half state money, because this is a regional park district, and there's a strong public precedent and policy here in the legislature that regional parks are a collaborative effort between the state and the local taxpayers. And then use that jurisdictional basis to have a coordinated approach instead of a piecemeal approach to go after these designated projects while we still can. I think some of my colleagues here that testified a few minutes ago were perhaps a little restrained in their description of where these water resources are going to be if we don't get after them right away. And we think that this approach will give us the ability to coordinate our efforts and actually complete projects instead of one step forward and two steps back, which is where we're at now. And there are some controversial aspects to this bill. It's a controversial issue, and we won't hide from them. The politics of this is we're trying to get through this committee so that we can get to the committee that doles out the money. We know that what little money is there has probably been earmarked to people who've already been there. So we understand what our chances for this biennium are. We also understand that many things happen in this legislature, but they can't happen if you're not a player in the game. We're trying to get to be a player in the game. The bill can be perhaps, you know, modified, delayed, changed, but we do feel we need to go forward with opening up a new approach. We're not hopeful with where we are right now. We're willing to take the public stand. We're willing to bring the money with us.
Mr. Holton, one of the issues you're trying to, one of the problems you're trying to solve with this is that watershed districts don't necessarily correspond to political lines on a map, and you're trying to address these more on a watershed area versus political. You're trying to cut across the political jurisdictions.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Senator Barrow.
Mr. Chairman, I have two questions of any of the witnesses, including Senator Bana. First of all, the significance of the green versus the purple lakes are, and I understand that the later ones, the green ones apparently, are Three Rivers Park District lakes. Are not all of them in the Three Rivers Park District, or just some at different stages of identification for TMDL? Am I misunderstanding what I see here?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the green represents lakes that are on the impaired waters list that Three Rivers Park District has property on.
Thank you. And my second question is, I'm trying to wonder whether language on 222, the exemption from fees by political subdivisions, is this a standard thing that we do here? I can't recall how many times I've seen this in bills. And is it critical? Could not be covered by the $5 million should you get it? Permit fees.
Mr. Holton?
Is the standard that we already exempt
from? Mr. Chairman, Senator Parisot, I believe that we would need those two lines to be exempted. At least our counsel who drafted this did.
I can't remember if I've seen this before, but except when we exempt local units of government, obviously, from some taxation purposes, it's probably an equivalent idea.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the lake that rests within the district I represent is Medicine Lake, and I don't know if people have had a chance to ever see Medicine Lake, but I had not seen it until I represented it. And it's a lake that's only about maybe 7 minutes from downtown Minneapolis, and it's tucked away, and there's homes all around the lake, and it's like a little community that you might find up in northern Minnesota, and these people have such a commitment to this lake and to their community. They all take care of it. They have the art shanty projects there in the winter where they have these ice houses and show art, and it's really quite an unusual jewel, and they're very concerned about the quality of the water because it's getting to be just terrible, and that's why I was willing to be the one to bring this forward. I'm committed to all of the water cleanup in our state, but the thing that intrigued me was the idea that the Three Rivers Park people are willing to put forth their money right now, even if it should happen, that in this biennium, we don't have the money if we committed to them perhaps in the next biennium. If that commitment was forthcoming, they were still willing to front-end their money and begin this water cleanup today.
Senator Bonhoeff, to your witnesses, money is really short and tight this year, but this looks to me like some good ideas for cooperation. Are you hoping that this will pass in, some of this will pass into law, the policy will pass into law this year, whether or not there's money attached to it? And I realize you'd prefer to have the money. But
yes, and Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, yes, we would seek the authorities and keep seeking funding. And you mentioned cooperation. I can tell you that this still will not work unless we're able to cooperate with all the other entities that have partial jurisdictions over water quality. So that cooperation is a necessity, and we would. We would love to have the whole bill, and or some money, but we're realistic.
And we have three other individuals that would like to testify. So, Senator Anderson, you have a question.
Not to sneeze, but I'll try to Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm wondering if it seems to me that most of the purposes here could be could probably use bonding dollars. Have you explored that possibility for next year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, you're right about that, and that is in the back of our minds.
And Mr. Chair, last summer I went camping at the, I guess it was one of the regional, I forget what the name of the park was, at Lake Independence.
Yeah.
And it was a group of families and with small children, and I went on the web and checked the water quality of the lake before we went. And they said it was not suitable for recreation. And we all swam anyway. But so it made me wonder, what does that really mean? But I know what you're talking about. These are beautiful, beautiful lakes, and they serve probably millions of people if you combine them all together, the number of people that recreate in the waters of these lakes in the metropolitan area. We really need them to be in better shape. So I think this is a great idea.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing nobody wanting to ask more questions, I'm going to ask Joel Carlson, has indicated he would like to testify, if you would come forward now.
Hello.
We have Mr. Bowen and Mr. Carlson. Which of you would like to go first?
I think I'll probably go first, Mr. Chairman.
Carlson,
thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and since 1994, I've represented the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. And we, of course, support clean water efforts across the state, and we certainly don't have concern about that part of the bill. But we do have some concerns as it relates to Minnehaha Creek, which its landmass encompasses a fair portion of the Three River Parks District. And our problem is this. We already have legislative authority and direction for clean water activities within much of the Three River Parks District. We have a levy authority. We have a comprehensive plan. We have TMDL targets. And we actually are out on comment right now with a 10-year comprehensive plan to address a number of the things that are contained in this bill. So our concern is one of overlap, duplication of effort, and to the extent that the bill moves forward, we think at a minimum you should consider amending this so that it would not apply to any area that is covered by a watershed district. I believe that the Nine Mile Creek also has part of the Three River Park jurisdiction. And so, you know, we're adding an additional layer of water management into an area where the Office of the Legislative Auditor said we have too much overlap right now in a report that they gave to the legislature in January. So we have some concerns about overlap of jurisdiction, and so we would ask that you consider that as this moves forward, so that we don't just add another layer of water management to an area that is already being handled as directed by the legislature from a watershed district. Be happy to answer any questions. I know Mr. Bowen is here on behalf of the Association of Watershed Districts that would have the slippery slope concern, I think, about this as it relates to other jurisdictions.
Questions, Mr. Carlson?
And Mr. Chair, members, this is the first I've heard of Mr. Carlson's concerns, so I, you know, might have been able to work some of this out and at least understood where he was coming from had I heard, but I think after we hear from our other witness, Mr. Holton is prepared to address those concerns.
Mr. Bowen?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bowen. I'm here representing Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and by taking a quick look at this bill, it appears to me as what they're in effect trying to do is establish a watershed district within a watershed district. Now, I understand that they're not totally, their land mass is not totally covered with watershed districts. We have a couple of major watershed districts in the area. There are some other joint power WMO organizations, which I believe also encompasses some of their land. But it just seems to me, our concerns would be the just almost duplication of effort, the way it appears to us, the way this language is written. But also, there's some concern here about some drainage, about changing the course or terminus of any public ditch drain. That's something that obviously drainage authorities would be very concerned about as well. So I think, overall, we just have some concerns, broad concerns about what this means in terms of putting other, other authorities inside of already existing authorities. So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. For Mr. Bowen or Mr. Carlson, just tell us what you think the watershed, I guess you're representing the watershed districts. Mr. Carlson, are you also?
I represent Minnehaha Creek Watershed.
Minnehaha Creek Watershed, sorry. Okay. So maybe either one of you could just tell us what are the current watershed districts doing about the water quality and do you think the efforts are successful, or do you think there's a need for more action?
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I don't know that there's a more active watershed district in the state than Minnehaha Creek. It is one of the largest urban watersheds in the country. It has a property valuation of over $38 billion. And it is one of the most aggressive watershed districts in the state relative to water quality, not just surface water, but flooding and groundwater protection as well. We right now have a 10-year comprehensive plan that is out for public comment, and it is being criticized as being too restrictive on development and buffer strip and the requirements that we are moving towards. And so we have a very active watershed district, and we're proud of our record on clean water and flooding as well.
And Mr. Chair, members, I actually live on the creek, so I too have a commitment to the Minnehaha Creek.
Further questions for Mr. Bowen or Mr. Carlson? If this bill moves, it's going to have several other stops, one of them being state and local government and judiciary and maybe agriculture. So you gentlemen would have some opportunity to work with Senator Bondoff.
And Mr. Chairman, in apology or defense, and hopefully it'll come on the schedule a little bit before the committee hearing comes up, because I didn't see it on the calendar until about 8:30 when I was in Texas with Senator Ingebrigtsen this morning. So I apologize for that.
Thank you for your
testimony.
Thank you.
And then one other individual, Marianne Campbell.
Mr. Chair, I believe Mr. Holton just wanted to say something in response, if that would be okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, the Minnehaha Creek Group is doing an excellent job with the resources that they have. And if you see the documents that we handed out in the map, no part of what we're presently preparing to go after involves their area or the work that they're doing. But you will hear, as this bill goes along, if it does, and I certainly hope it will, you will hear from many other protectors of fiefdoms. And as kind of a simple person who just fell off the turnip truck and this water issue, which I am, because I'm just coming to it now. It's not the hat that you've usually seen me wear in the past. Some of these ideas are sometimes more simple ideas are better, and it strikes me that if you can match authority, coordination, and ownership to go after a land problem, you're much better off. We have too many decision makers in this whole water world, and I think that the question that Senator Anderson asked should be asked to each person that comes forward, you know, protecting a piece of jurisdictional turf. But lastly, we would add, not detract, to those by bringing our resources and our understanding that cooperative attitude, a cooperative project, is the only one that's going to work. And I will work with Mr. Carlson, but I don't think he has anything to fear in this bill.
Any members for the question? For certain, this bill needs to go to state and local government and to judiciary because of the eminent domain and probably to agriculture because of the effect on drainage. What is the desire of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I sat on that committee, so I'll ask my questions when we get that committee. And I, this was passed out, and I see four places are feedlot management. So between now and sometime, I may ask for it, and I may not.
You're speaking as chair of this Senate Agriculture Committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move the bill. I guess, should we send it to the Policy Committee next? I mean, you probably, Senator Bono, I don't know if my staff has focused on trying to hear this bill in finance, but it would have to be this week. So there's an issue with trying to get to all those stops in time.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator.
The normal process, it would go to state and local government.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to move then that Senate File 1251 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government.
Senator Anderson has moved Senate File 1251 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Discussion on that motion. Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, I have listened to the testimony, and I really wonder what the impact is going to be. I realize other committees will have different jurisdictions. Like, I know last year the eminent domain was a big one. The joint powers, and then kind of a underlying question I have is, you know, we passed the legislation for the MTDL. Anyway, where is the funding for that going to come from, and would we be picking and choosing a priority list that may or may not be at the top of the heap?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I think you make a really good point, and we have a number of requests in front of the Finance Committee for, well, several, not a lot, but several for different lakes and watersheds around the state that have really great ideas for focusing efforts on cleaning up their area. And the reason for that is that we haven't funded the Clean Water Legacy implementation the way that we should have. You know, Bowser tells us that, you know, something like $40 million worth of projects they were not able to fund because there were so many requests. So there's a lot of citizens who are really motivated to do something, and there's laws that require us to get it done, to do the TMDL process, but we haven't come up with enough money to keep it moving. And so I think that's why we're getting these individual requests. How to handle that? You know, my wish would be to make sure we have enough general fund dollars. We need $80 million a year at a minimum to really do this statewide.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
Stumpf, it would be our hope that by doing this legislation that other watershed districts might consider doing something similar so that we could begin to have this idea about trying to come up with matching dollars happen, and we can get to more of these faster. I asked the same question when they brought the bill to me. I said, well, then am I, you know, saying this is more important than that? Where is this on the priority list? And I heard that it was going to be maybe done in 2009. So I think it's on the list, but what we're saying is we'd be willing to start it sooner with our money, even if you didn't give us the money till 2009. And so this is it's really just a new approach for how to begin picking away at some of these larger projects.
Well, Mr. Senator Chair, just one other comment. That watershed districts were created to try to work across judicial boundaries. And I guess I would think that when you look at that list of activities, you know, controlling and alleviating damage from floodwaters, drainage, navigation, stormwater, the watershed districts are, you know, already in a position to do that. And unless there's something I don't quite understand. So I don't think by not doing this, I don't think that that would mean that it doesn't get done. I think the Three Rivers Watershed District would, or Three Rivers, this is a park district, but what is the watershed district within that area? Or are there more than one?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, actually within Three Rivers Park District's jurisdiction, there's a variety of watersheds. We do have watershed districts, as was mentioned, the Minnehaha Creek probably being the most prominent. As well as the watershed districts that are within our jurisdiction, we have a number of WMOs, or watershed management organizations. And those variety of management organizations manage a variety of those waters that we've mentioned today. So it is not simply one watershed district that oversees the entire area. It's a variety, and some of those smaller, particularly WMOs, do not have the ability, both from a financial standpoint or from a staffing standpoint, to begin to implement the TMDLs or certainly the recommendations of the TMDLs for cleaning up the water. Nor do they have the ability in many cases to provide the administrative match that is required currently within the language of the Clean Water Legacy. The benefit, again, of this legislation is that we would be bringing our money to the table and provide the initial dollars that can move forward with completing some of those TMDLs and ultimately the implementation.
Mr. Barton, I have one further question that I think we need to move on to both. But and most in these lakes and these streams, have the assessments been done or the evaluation? Or are you still in the process of gathering water quality information and doing the assessments?
Mr. Chair, members, just to clarify again, Bo Carlson. Mr. Barton is our water quality expert. No problem. On all of these water bodies that are within our current jurisdiction or our boundaries, we do extensive monitoring of both water quality, recreational quality, a variety of other things that we have completed significant portions of the monitoring that's necessary. In many cases, it is just putting the plan together or the TMDL together.
And that monitoring you've done meets the requirements of PCA for being accurate?
Mr. Chair, I will have to turn it over to Mr. Barton on that one for the specifics.
Mr. Chair, John Barton, again, the Water Resources Manager for the Park District. And, yes, our monitoring program does comply with all the requirements of the Pollution Control Agency and the Environmental Protection Agency.
Thank you. Senator Anderson moved that Senate File 1251 be recommended passed and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion carries and the bill is sent to state and local government. Committee will take up Senator Saxog's bill, Senate File 476.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 476, the DNROHV damage account bill, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus ATV.
Senator Saxog, we have talked about an amendment, and I think Senate Council has the changes to affect what we have talked about. If you'd be willing to move what Senate Council has we could deal with that before we...
Mr. Chair, I would move that amendment.
Okay, Mr. Knapp, would...
Mr. Chairman, it would be on line 1.10. After vehicles, inserts for the operation of off-highway vehicles, then reinstate the stricken language on 1.10. So it would read, after done, would be property damaged by the illegal operation of off-highway vehicles or the operation of off-highway vehicles in an unpermitted area after August 1, 2003. And then on line 1.13, reinstate the stricken language, and before the new language illegal, insert or, so it reads caused by the unpermitted or illegal use of off-highway vehicles. So that would keep the two options as part.
Questions about Senator Saxdog's amendment? As an individual, I'd like to make, sir, you want to make comment on the amendment?
On the bill.
Senator Saxdog has moved the amendment that Mr. Knapp has explained to us. Discussion on that amendment. Hearing no discussion, proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. The amendment's adopted. We have time for a couple minutes of testimony if you'd like to testify. Welcome to the committee and identify yourself for our records, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gene Larimore with the Jackpine Coalition. I'm here because I don't know where you left the date issue.
Mr. Larimore, we did not change the date.
So it is that the 07 business is off the table.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Bowen, would you like to weigh in on this also?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ray Bowen. I'm representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and I would like to weigh in on the date issue. By leaving it 2003, it seems to me that what we're doing is we're doing some retroactive legislation. So depending upon what the words mean, and I'm not quite sure I know what the difference between unpermitted and illegal is. You know, if you leave it 2003, someone then theoretically or legally, it seems to me, could come back and reopen many of the decisions that DNR has made over the last 4 years by now arguing that, in fact, that was illegal activity. So now we're going back 4 years and refighting many of those cases. I could see that happening. And it just seems to me that instead of making this language retroactive, that the unpermitted would stay in effect until August 1st, 2007, and then the new language would become in effect then. And it seems to me that unless I'm misreading this somehow, and Greg, Mr. Knapp, maybe you can explain to me, but it seems to me that we are, in fact, going back 4 years on this language.
Mr. Chairman, I think the representative from the DNR, I don't remember his name, kind of spelled out that, I mean, adding the word illegal, I don't know that adding the word illegal will bring any new cases to this. They were looking for clarification to use the word illegal. The issue is after August 1st of this year, well, actually, if this becomes part of an omnibus bill, it would actually take effect on July 1st. But by changing that date, the whole law changes. So if you applied after July 1st or August 1st, whenever this becomes effective, and you change that date to 2005, even the unpermitted parts, even though it's part of the old law, you would have had to make application before that date. If you make the application after that date, then it wouldn't. You would have a new date, so it would only be damage after the new date.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knapp, maybe we can have some discussions offline, but I am concerned. You understand what my concern is that someone could go back 4 years and argue just the opposite in terms of the illegal.
Mr. Chairman, I remember the discussion 4 years ago when that unpermitted use was added in. There was some concern that, I think that there was some discussion about using the term illegal back then, and that the issue was to use unpermitted was to, in case there were some areas that were unpermitted, but it wouldn't be necessarily illegal. So in my mind, the word illegal just clarifies that illegal, but that should be assumed within unpermitted, because unpermitted should include illegal.
Again, and Mr. Chairman and Mr. Knapp, I understand that, but I don't know what some court will do with that language, as you know. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if, in order to avoid having things that have been decided to be recharged or reappealed, if that's the correct word, and inviting people to come back and try to have a go at the past decision. We need to have a clause to say you can't do that. Is it possible that it would fix what Mr. What our witnesses' comments fear? I'm not sure how this works either. Mr. Knapp might be better to respond to that possibility.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in my opinion, it wouldn't necessarily need to do anything else with it. I'm not sure that it can bring anything else in, but if there is fear that it is, on line 1.10 after the vehicles, before the amendment, you could insert after August 1st, 2007, and then it would be for the operation of off-highway vehicles in an unpermitted area after August 1st, 2003. And you could have two dates within there. It's a little confusing, I think, but you could if you desired.
Mr. Chair, from a practical standpoint, given the fact that we have such a large balance left in that account, I'm just not seeing it being a huge problem. If that account was completely used up and there wasn't anything left and we were going to think about using existing funds to go back, then I'd see it as a problem, but I don't think I do.
Senator Saxon, this bill does have to go to finance, so it should be referred to finance.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I was going to move that the Senate File 476 is amended to be passed and sent to Environment Finance.
Senator Saxon, I'll move Senate File 476 as amended to be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance. Discussion on that motion. Hearing no discussion, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, the motion carries and the bill is sent to finance. And now we have Senator Cooley's bill, Senate File 1410, the non-resident fishing fees. What would the committee like to do with that bill? The floor is open for an amendment, for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'm a little, I'm still thinking that, you know, a little comparison about how our resident, how the neighboring states treat our non-residents is an applicable decision maker for this bill.
So
I don't know where we go.
Well, we could have the bill lie over for further discussion at a subsequent meeting. On the table now. If there's no motion, that's where it's going to stay.
Mr. Chair, I left in the middle of the discussion. Where did we end up with it? Could you give me a nothing? Did anything change or
nothing really, really changed?
Okay.
Why don't we do that?
And
further discussion in this committee?
It'll just stay on the table if there's no motion. And the last bill we have is the chair. We got here. Senator Saxon, were you? The chair, Senator Chaudhry, had to present a bill in another committee. That's the last bill on the agenda. So the meeting will be recessed until 12:30 or immediately after session.
Are we in this room at 12:30? No, we're back in our regular rooms.
Back in room 107.
Until economic development takes that room away from us, which is also meeting.